Mars. Early to bed. And in between I cooked and cleaned and read out of my head. Going through life with blinders on, it's tough to see. I had to get up, get out from under and look for me. There's a new girl in town and she's looking good. There's a fresh freckled face in the
This is S4E12 of Fanacek, Vic Tayback, part two. It's been 2 weeks since the last podcast, last episode. Sorry about that, folks. But researching Vic Tayback is an arduous job. I would wish it upon no one, not even my worst enemy. But I'm glad I get to do it for you. So what I thought I would do is start off with some interesting Vic Tayback trivia before we start to pick up his career in what would be a very pivotal year for him, 1974. Let's take a look at some interesting Vic Tayback trivia. Tayback had a listed number in the phone book. When his local phone company decided to pay tribute to his listed number by putting him on the cover, he got so many phone calls he had to change it to unlisted. That's kind of a dick move by the phone book, right? Hey, Vic Tayback's in here. Let's put him on the cover and encourage strangers to call him. Anyway, I thought that was fun. So again, we're going to pick up in a very critical year for Vic. It's 1974. This is the year that he would land the role that he would be remembered for the rest of his life. This role defined him, and that role is, of course, Mel Sharples. The movie was Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and that movie was a beast. It was directed, and people forget this, it was directed by Martin Scorsese. It was earlier in his career. It was one of the few projects early on that he wasn't involved in the writing process for. He was a director for hire at that point. Directed Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Let's read a little synopsis, if you will. Pull up my trusty IMDb. They should honestly fucking pay for this podcast. All right, let's take a look here. Here's the synopsis. A recently widowed woman is on the road with her precocious young son, determined to make a new life for herself as a singer. So the lead, of course, was Ellen Burstyn. Kris Kristofferson was in this. Alfred Lutter III played Tommy. Billy Bush Green. Who else was in here? As I scroll through, any other? Harvey Keitel in a small role, which is interesting because he already had a working relationship with Scorsese at this point. Mean Streets, of course, Taxi Driver. Diane Ladd was in this as Flo, and that's going to come back later on. Vic Tayback as Mel. Valerie Curtin played Vera. We've talked about Valerie Curtin a lot. She was in the 9 to 5 TV show that I talked about, I think in season 2 of Fanacek. But also, she was famously in the unaired pilot of Three's Company, which is kind of a timely thing to mention, just given the recent death of Suzanne Somers. And another cast member of Three's Company will come up later on in this podcast, one I've never actually mentioned before. So I'm excited about that. But Valerie Curtin, when they originally did it, it was John Ritter and two other women. And they ended up scrapping that. And Valerie Curtin was one of those two women. And there was a young kid in this movie in like a kind of a small role. And I'll never forget, I've told the story in the podcast before, but I watched Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore years ago. It was when I was at Second City. And I've talked about this too. When you're going through their conservatory, there's different levels. And there's a certain level, I don't remember which one, where a lot of it is you're doing homework. You're studying different styles of filmmaking, in essence, so you can better improvise them on stage. For example, you need to know who Kurosawa is. You need to know who Fellini is. You want to understand mafia films, Western films, that sort of thing. So this was back in the Netflix days where they mailed you DVDs. And so I was just getting all these movies. And I never forget getting Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I had never seen it. This is probably, we're talking like 2005 at this point. And I was taken by this little kid who had a small role. I was like, who is this kid? And I looked it up. it was a young Jodie Foster. I was like, well, shit. Jodie Foster was legit as a child actor. And gosh, was this before or after Taxi Driver? This is before Taxi Driver. So, well, there you go. That makes a little more sense because I would have recognized her post-Taxi Driver because she would have been a little bit older. I made a note to read some trivias about this film. Let's do that. Let's take a look here. Pull it up. Hot off her success with The Exorcist in 1973, the studio granted Ellen Burstyn total creative control over this project. She had two goals: to make a movie about a woman with real-life problems and to secure an up-and-coming filmmaker as a director. Upon selecting the script, Brian De Palma brought Francis Ford Coppola to Burstyn's attention, who suggested she consider Martin Scorsese. While impressed with Scorsese's talent after viewing Mean Streets, Burstyn still hesitated to hire the director, fearing he could only direct men. When she asked Scorsese what he knew about women, Scorsese replied, "Nothing, but I'd like to learn." Satisfied with his enthusiasm, Burstyn immediately hired Scorsese. I thought that was interesting. Want more? Well, here's more. Ellen Burstyn's Oscar was delivered to her because, by the way, she won an Oscar for this. Spoiler alert. Ellen Burstyn's Oscar was delivered to her in a liquor box by Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau at the stage door of the Broadway theater where she was working. She asked Matthau what an Oscar really meant, and he told her, "Let's put it this way, Ellen. When you die, the newspapers will say the Academy Award-winning actress Ellen Burstyn died today." And I thought that was interesting as well. And the role, though, of Mel Sharples was born and would return. But first, 1974 had a lot of other credits for old Vic Tayback. Oh, before I move on, there were a lot of Oscars here, right? So Oscar winner, Best Actress, Ellen Burstyn. Supporting actress, Diane Ladd, was nominated. It was also nominated for original screenplay. Burstyn and Ladd were also nominated for Golden Globe. So this movie was a beast. And of course, Diane Ladd, who played Flo, and the character of Flo, you know, comes back. And so does Diane Ladd. But that, of course, is Laura Dern's mom. Can't not mention that. Laura Dern's mommy was Diane Ladd. All right. So going back to 74. He did an episode of a short-lived TV show called Griff, which I've talked about on the podcast before, and an episode of the show The Rookies. It's not terribly interesting. It's about three young cops. But his most impressive TV role in 1974 was an episode of arguably, in my opinion, the greatest sitcom of all time, All in the Family. That's right. Vic Tayback is doing All in the Family. His episode, it aired January 26, 1974. It was titled Et Tu, Archie? A little play on some Shakespeare there and Julius Caesar. Here's the synopsis. Archie learns his old friend is unemployed and engaged in an all-out effort to find a job. Any job. Even if it means a job at the loading dock. So, of course, the old friend was played by Vic Tayback. That's Joe Tucker was the character's name. I got a more interesting synopsis. Here we go. So Joe Tucker is played by Vic Tayback. Here's a more in-depth synopsis. Joe Tucker, an old friend of Archie's, comes calling, whom he thinks has made himself into a huge success. It turns out that things are not so good for Joe. Not only is he out of work, but he's been seeing a psychiatrist. Uh-oh. He applied for a job at the docks, and Archie thinks that he might be after his job. At work, the manager calls Archie in to ask questions about Joe's character, and Archie tells the boss about the psychiatrist. Not only does Joe get the job, despite this, but to becomes Archie's new supervisor. Whoa. So hear that, kiddos. You get a psychiatrist, you become a supervisor at the loading dock. There you go. I remember this episode. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember there being a great line. I'm probably going to butcher it. But when he's describing Joe Tucker to Edith, who she hasn't met Joe Tucker yet, he's like, "He's my best friend that I haven't seen in 17 years. So I don't know, something like that. That guess wasn't as funny now that I say it out loud, but the way Carol O'Connor delivered the line, it was art. Tayback also did a couple of pictures in 1974. I like calling them pictures, not films, not movies, pictures. So he did a couple of pictures. He did the Clint Eastwood, Jeff Bridges film Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. This was, I've read a book. What book was it? I think it might have been Cinema Speculation, Tarantino's book, where he was talking about this. And he thought it was a strange choice for Eastwood to do a film that was going to get his co-star an Oscar nomination. But Thunderbolt and Lightfoot was a pretty big movie in 74. With the help of an irreverent young sidekick, played by Jeff Bridges, a bank robber, played by Clint Eastwood, gets his old gang back together to organize a daring new heist. Bum, bum, bum. So, of course, I let the cat out of the bag. Jeff Bridges got an Oscar nomination for this. It was written and directed by Michael Cimino, which is kind of interesting because we were just talking about Coppola and De Palma and, of course, Scorsese. Michael Cimino directed The Deer Hunter, Which is a classic. He directed Heaven's Gate, which is a classic fucking waste of money. Big, if you ever look that up, look up Heaven's Gate, like the making of Heaven's Gate. This really inflated budget and it kind of fucking went nowhere. But all these guys, again, you know, De Palma, Scorsese, Coppola, Cimino, Paul Schrader, I'm sure I'm forgetting some. Bogdanovich. They're all really talked about. If you ever want to learn about them, one of the best books about filmmaking I've ever read, kind of behind the scenes filmmaking, is called Easy Riders and Raging Bulls. And it's about all these directors in the 70s who basically changed cinema and they created what they call the new cinema. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Let's take a look at the cast of Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Of course, Eastwood and Bridges. George Kennedy was in this. Catherine Bach. Ooh, made famous for Daisy Dukes in the Dukes of Hazzard. She's the one wearing those. She played Daisy, and she was a piece of ace. Gary Busey was in this. Who else is in this movie? Anyone else? Of course, Vic Tayback. I think that's about it. I don't see any other names I recognize here. Big movie, again, written and directed by Michael Cimino. Another picture that Vic Tayback did in 74 was the James Caan classic, The Gambler. Not to be confused with the Kenny Rogers movie. You gotta know when to hold 'em. Know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting. When the dealing's done, you're welcome for that, folks. That was a little Fanacek exclusive. I like The Gambler with James Caan. I also like The Gambler with Kenny Rogers. And then there's even The Gambler with Mark Wahlberg, which we'll mention in a second. So lots of gambling movies. This one's kind of a classic. You know, James Caan is great. I love James Caan. I'll read you the synopsis of this. We lost James Caan year before last, right? Because I think last year was the first year I ever watched Elf for Christmas without having James Caan in the world. So here is a synopsis. Axel Fried is a literature professor. He has the gambling vice. When he has lost all of his money, he borrows from his girlfriend, then his mother, and finally some bad guys that chase him. Despite all of this, he cannot stop gambling. I'm kind of like that, except with drinking. They should make a movie about me called The Drinker, starring me. And then later on, Wahlberg can remake it. Because Wahlberg, in fact, in the 2000s, remade this movie. No one went and saw it because Mark Wahlberg is no James Caan. Who's in this movie? Let's take a look at the cast. James Caan, Paul Sorvino from Goodfellas fame. He played Paulie. Burt Young, who we just lost. Burt Young was in this. And we should mention that. Burt Young died in October, last month. That's sad. He, of course, done a lot of stuff. He was Paulie in all the Rocky movies. He had a really good turn in The Sopranos. He played Bobby Bacala's dad, like with the emphysema. He could hardly breathe. They brought him in to kill somebody. It was always an interesting dynamic because his father, played by Burt Young, was a famous hitman, whereas Bobby Bacala didn't kill anybody until he did, which if you haven't seen The Sopranos, you'll see what Bobby Bacala does. But Emmett Walsh was James Woods within this. He's going to come back in the podcast. Who else? Anybody else? No. Anyways, written by James Toback. How about that? Toback's done a lot of stuff. He wrote Bugsy. What else? I'm trying to look at Toback. I know the name. Nothing jumps out at me, but anyway, that is The Gambler. Again, remade with Wahlberg. No one cared because he is no James Caan. Back to Vic Tayback. He has 10 credits in 1975. So we're in 75 now. My man does 10 projects. I mean, like, this guy stayed busy as shit. 1975 was a very good year for Vic Tayback. So it was mostly movies, but some TV. He did some, you know, forgettable, short-lived TV stuff like they all do. He did Caan. He was in 4 out of the 5 episodes of Caan. That's a show I talked about in season 1 of Fanacek. Starred an Asian actor. It was actually mostly an Asian cast, I think. But the lead actor left. He felt like it wasn't representing Asians in the way that he thought it would, and he quit. So that show basically got sunk because the lead quit after 5 episodes. I don't know if he got sued or what. I have to imagine that fucked up his career. But anyway, that's Caan. He did 2 episodes of Insight. That's that religious show we've talked about. He did an episode of Switch. He did an episode of On the Rocks, which I didn't know this one. So let's talk about On the Rocks. It looks like a giant pile of turds, really. Ran from 75 to 76. It lasted 24 episodes. Alamisa Minimum Security Prison has 4 inmates in a friendly rivalry with their guards and warden. Sounds a little bit like, what's that Bob Crane show? Jesus, how do I always forget this shit when I'm recording? Hogan's Heroes, right? Except they were prisoners of war, and these guys are, in a minimum security prison. But anyhow, I did make a note to read a trivia in this. Well, actually, I'll go through the cast first. Rick Hurst, who I don't know. Jose Perez, who I don't know. Hal Williams is in it, though. Hal Williams came up in the last episode, I think. He is he was the dad in 227. He was in Private Benjamin. But he was in Hardcore with George C. Scott as Big Dick Black. He played a porn star named Big Dick Black. That's a great porn name. Tom Poston was in this show. Tom Poston went on to get a lot of recognition for Newhart. He played like the bumbling handyman in the bed and breakfast there. He really did a great job. Rita Moreno was in this show. Sorrel Brook, who was Boss Hogg. And we just mentioned Catherine Bach earlier, Daisy Duke. So a lot of Dukes of Hazzard, of course, Tayback. I think it's about it as I scroll through people who did this show. I made a note to read a trivia about it. So why don't I go ahead and do that? Like I promised, I was lost the show here. Let me pull it up. Let's see. Trivia. This was the U.S. version of the hugely successful British sitcom Porridge, produced by the BBC from 74 to 77. Porridge was a British slang term for a prison sentence. So there you go. Right? So next time you're on Jeopardy and they're like, another word to start with P, another word for a prison sentence. You can go, what is porridge? And you would win. And then you would thank Vanacek. We have to move on. Okay, going back to Tayback. He then did some good TV shows, right, in 76, or 75, rather. He did episodes of Canny. He did three episodes of Canny, actually. He did an episode of Barney Miller. Dude, Barney Miller is a good show. I don't feel like it in history is treating it as well as it should. It was such a massive show. Let me read about it, actually. So let's chat about it. Here's the synopsis. So it ran from 75 to 82, 171 episodes. The captain of the NYPD 12th Precinct and his staff handle the various local troubles and characters that come into the squad room. This fucking show ruled. The lead was Hal Linden as Barney Miller. Abe Vigoda played Fish. He was Detective Fish, but he had his own spinoff for a while called Fish, where him and his wife, I think, had a bunch of foster children or something. Didn't last long. Abe Vigoda was famously also in The Godfather. He's one of the last people that Michael takes out in the OG Godfather. He's one who asked Tom Hayden, played by Duvall. He's like, hey, how about for old time's sake, you know, you guys save me. And they had to decline. But Abe Vigoda is most famous for wandering around my neighborhood when I was a kid. So he was from the Bronx, Riverdale section of the Bronx, or at least he lived there later in life. I used to see him all the time at the grocery store and everything. At the time, he was coming off of Look Who's Talking, the John Travolta film. He played John Travolta's grandfather in that. That's kind of how I knew him. Then I recognized him, of course, from Barney Miller. Then later, The Godfather. But I came to The Godfather more in my teenage years. But I just remember being a little kid and walking around the grocery store and seeing Abe Vigoda. It was kind of a cool thing. Max Gale, Steve Landisberg, Ron Glass was in this. Jack Sue. Killer show, man. That is Barney Miller. Now, like All in the Family, this show really reminds me of New York era that I grew up in. It really does. Like Barney Miller feels like the New York that I knew with my grandmother, just like All in the Family does. And here's an interesting fact about Barney Miller. Only 13 episodes of the 171, right? Only 13 episodes featured scenes outside of the police station. So they really kept, it's kind of like Cheers, like almost all the action was in that one location. I thought that was interesting. I tried to identify, I couldn't find it. If you can, email me, let me know. I was trying to look up how many episodes of Cheers featured scenes outside of the bar. My guess is it's got to be less than 30. And there's got to be, what, 220 some odd episodes of Cheers, something like that? I don't know, I haven't looked it up. But anyway, 1975. Also, Vic Tayback did some forgettable movies, but here's one I want to point out. He did a movie called Lepke, and this is going to lead us down a tangent. But first, we'll read about Lepke. So again, it's 1975. Louis Lepke Buchalter is head of Murder, Inc., the syndicate that spattered the headlines of the day with blood. Star Tony Curtis as Lepke. Who else? Michael Callan as Robert Kane. Michael Callan is actually he's mentioned in the book Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Rick Dalton didn't like him. He kind of shit on him a little bit. I only know that because I'm rereading the novel. Because, ooh, I don't know what I mentioned now, but I'm going to be appearing on a pretty cool Tarantino podcast later in the month. And so I'm brushing up on my Once Upon a Time in Hollywood info. Milton Berle was in this movie. Who else? No one really worth mentioning. But here's why I want to discuss it. Okay. The real reason why I discuss this is it was directed by Menahem Golan. Now, if you know any low-budget movies, like low-budget 80s action films, then you might be interested in Menahem Golan. He, along with his cousin, Yoram Globus, they made up Golan and Globus, right? They were famous filmmakers in the 80s. And then they most famous in was Canon Films. So Golden Globe has purchased Canon Films. Now, I've got some half-assed research for you, so I'm going to start reading now. This is really interesting stuff, at least to me. Okay. So, going back to Canon Films. By 1979, Canon had hit serious financial difficulties. So, cousins Menahem Golan and Yoram Globus bought it for $500,000. The two cousins forged a business model of buying bottom barrel scripts and putting them into production. They produced such films in a variety of genres, although their biggest successes were with action films. They tapped into a ravenous market for B-movies in the 1980s. After buying the rights to the 1974 film Death Wish, Canon produced three sequels to it in the 1980s, all starring Charles Bronson. Despite negative reviews, these films were financially successful, especially Death Wish 2, which earned over $40 million on an $8 million budget. Other major hits for Canon were a series of action movies starring Chuck Norris, including Missing in Action, Invasion USA, The Delta Force. Missing in Action was criticized heavily as being a preemptive cash-in on the Rambo franchise. James Cameron's story treatment for Rambo First Blood Part 2 was floating around Hollywood in 1983, which Golan and Globus reviewed and were inspired by. The writers of Missing in Action even gave Cameron credit, saying their film was inspired by his script treatment. But Canon had initially put the prequel Missing in Action 2, The Beginning, into production. Only after the two movies were completed had the company realized that the planned second movie was superior to the first one, so the first movie was produced became an awkward prequel. So let me jump out and talk about that for a second. What that means is, I knew this story, I'd read about it in some damn book, I don't know. They made Missing in Action, right? And then they immediately made Missing in Action 2. But these two shitheads realized, hey, we like Missing in Action 2 better. So they released that one first and made the first one a weird prequel. Like, they twisted around to make it a prequel. All the while, Chuck Norris is like, what the fuck's going on? Anyway, the Canon Group ignited a worldwide ninja craze with the Ninja Trilogy, a film series which consisted of Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, and Ninja 3, The Domination. What else? Let me jump ahead here. They also produced the 3D Treasure of the Four Crowns, King Solomon's Mines. Those were those Alan Quartermain movies. I used to like those as a kid. And the vigilante thriller sequel, Exterminator 2. The Canon Group's biggest financial success was with the 1986 action film Cobra, which starred Sylvester Stallone. Not a low-budget film, it earned $160 million on a $25 million budget. I'm going to jump out again. Go watch Cobra. So Cobra, basically what it was, there was some movie they were making. I want to say it was like the original treatment for Beverly Hills Cop or something like that. And Stallone decided not to do it. And instead what he did was he wanted to make his own movie. So he took that treatment and turned it into Cobra. Cobra is one of the biggest pieces of shit ever made. There are literally scenes in there where we can see Sylvester Stallone's microphone taped to his chest. Like, just bullshit stuff. I think the character's name is Marion Cabretti. So he goes by Cobra. Anyway, I think it's famous for the line, "You're the disease and I'm the cure." Something like that. Oh, God. Go back and watch that. Back to my half-ass research here. So, Canon also produced musical and comedy films such as Breakin', Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. Those are both great movies. The Last American Virgin. Now, The Last American Virgin is also a great film. A great classic 80s movie with a really sad ending. Underrated movie because it's actually really good as teen comedies go in the 80s. But it was really the inspiration for American Pie as well. So American Pie, kind of a loose remake, if you will, of The Last American Virgin. And that's actually how it was marketed when it first came out, American Pie. That's kind of gotten lost in history, but I remember when it first came out, they were like basically a reboot of The Last American Virgin. Okay, back to my reading. They did erotic period drama pictures such as Lady Chatterley's Lover, Bolero. Oh, Bolero is with Bo Derek, where she's naked the whole time. You should watch that with the lights off. What else? Science fiction and fantasy films such as Hercules, Life Force, and The Barbarians. And serious pictures such as John Cassavetes' Love Streams, Franco Cifarelli's Otello, Norman Mailer's Tough Guys, Don't Dance, and some other goddamn movies. Okay. During these years, Canon prominently advertised at the Cannes Film Festival each year. Substantial pre-sales of the next year's films were made based on the strong salesmanship skills of Globus. The deposits made from these sales financed production of the first film in the production lineup, which, when completed and delivered to theater owners around the world, generated enough money to make the next film, and so on and so forth. So what they were doing is in the 80s. They were going to Cannes Film Festival and having, like, literally, they'd spend more money on these parties than they would on their actual films. Like, they'd have Schwarzenegger coming in on a tank and fucking Stallone coming in on a helicopter and all this crazy kind of shit. It would generate such buzz that they'd get a lot of investors. They'd make the money. When that money came out, they'd use that for the next party, which then got more money for the investors to make the second movie. It was just basically stealing from Peter to pay Paul all the time. But it worked, and they made these shitty movies. More reading, because I'm not done. Okay. Golan and Canon Films were famous for making huge announcements and over-promoting films that did not live up to expectations or even exist. For instance, Life Force was to be the cinematic sci-fi event of the 80s, and Masters of the Universe was dubbed the Star Wars of the 80s. That's that horrible Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie, and they advertised it as the Star Wars of the 80s. Additionally, Canon owned the film rights to Spider-Man and planned to make a Spider-Man film in the mid-1980s. Golan and Globus agreed to pay Marvel Comics $225,000 over the 5-year option period, plus a percentage of the film's revenues. Now think about that. The rights to Spider-Man for $225,000. You couldn't get the rights to Spider-Man now for like less than $1 billion, I would imagine. I mean, I'm not even making that up, because you can make 3 movies and make about $4 billion. Okay, the rights would revert to Marvel if a film was not made by April of 1990. Marvel and Sony would eventually complete the film, of course, in 2002, directed by Sam Raimi, after the rights had been resecured. So Golan and Globus fucked that up, and they never made a Spider-Man movie. And that is Golan and Globus. That is Canon Films. That, my friends, was a tangent. That was fun. All right. What else? Back to Vic Tayback. And that was fun. Okay, yeah. Let's do that. Back to Vic Tayback and our nation's bicentennial, because now we are in 1976. So this would be another career-defining year for Vic Tayback anyway, because this is the year that the sitcom Alice premiered. But we'll get to that in a second. 1976 was another crazy busy year for Vic. He did 11 credits. I mean, 10 the year before, then 11. I mean, my man is busy as shit. He did some TV, like a couple of episodes of Medical Center. I don't really feel like reading about Medical Center, but that show had a really cool opening theme. Let me pause the podcast. I'm going to pull that up. This is one of the best opening themes ever. Here it comes. Kicks up right now. Oh, I love it. Bum, bum. All right, that was fun. Love a good opening theme. That is an art form that has been lost. So he also did episodes of some short-lived shows like The Practice. We've discussed that before. That's that medical TV show with, Danny Thomas, I think, was leading it. He did Brink with Jack Palance. It was a detective show with Jack Palance. Of course, won an Oscar for, what the hell was that? City Slickers, right? He famously did push-ups on the stage. And he did some hit TV shows too this year, Vic Tayback did. He did Family with Meredith Baxter Burney, Christy McNichol. He did McCloud. I should read about McCloud, because McCloud was it was a mystery show like McMillan and Wife and Columbo. It was in that same genre, but I don't think I've ever really talked about McCloud. So let's pull it up. It's a pretty cool show. A New Mexico deputy marshal gets assigned to Manhattan's 27th precinct. So the whole theme of it, like especially the opening, is like him on a horse going into New York City, not unlike Rick Grimes in Atlanta on The Walking Dead, that kind of vibe. It was a good show. But 1976 was mostly a movie year for Vic Tayback. Oh, a picture, yeah. He made pictures in 1976. He did the TV movie Dark Victory. Check out this synopsis. This was worth fucking mentioning. A television producer, Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched. How about that shit? A television producer with a terminal illness is given the strength to keep going by the love of her doctor, Sir Anthony Hopkins. How about that? A TV movie with Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched, one of the great beauties of all time, and Anthony Hopkins, one of the great actors of all time. I thought that was kind of neat. Then Vic Tayback, he did a few screwball comedies like No Deposit, No Return. That had Darren McGavin in it, Don Knotts, Kim Richards. She was on the Beverly Hills Housewives with her sister Kyle Richards. Kim Richards is going to come back here in a little bit. And then he did The Big Bus, another screwball comedy. Check out this cast. First, I guess I'll read the synopsis. The Big Bus was a nuclear-powered bus. Jesus. A nuclear-powered bus driving cross-country from New York City to Colorado is destined for disaster due to the machinations of a mysterious group allied with the oil lobby. And yes, folks, this is a screwball comedy. Check out this cast, though. Joe Bologna, Stalker Channing. She was Rizzo in Grease. Rene Auberginot, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was the fellow from Benson. Ned Beatty was in this. Jose Ferrer. Ruth Gordon. I love Ruth Gordon. Great Ruth Gordon movie. Well, first of all, she was an Arthur. She crushed it in that. But one of my favorite movies was a Chris Makepeace movie with Adam Baldwin and Ruth Gordon. It's called My Bodyguard. A young Matt Dillon was in it. I think it's like from 1980. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't seen My Bodyguard, God, it's a good movie. And it holds up. I watched it not too long ago. It's so good. Larry Hagman was in this. Sally Kellerman. Richard Mulligan. He was, of course, in Soap and Empty Nest. Howard Hessman was in this from WKRP in Cincinnati. He played Dr. Johnny Fever. He'll come up again later. Who else? Anyone else I know? That's a killer fucking cast, though. Pretty cool. Okay. Then, of course, in the same vein of zany screwball comedies, Vic Tayback also did Disney's The Shaggy D.A. But the main thing to discuss in 1976, of course, is Alice. So let's go ahead and do it. He did Alice, a TV show. Iconic show. It was really big. Ran from 76 to 85. By the way, 1985? For anyone in my age range, did you realize Alice was on into the mid-fucking 80s? I had no idea. I've always thought of it as like a 70s show. 76 to 85, it lasted 202 episodes. Let's pull up a synopsis. The misadventures and trials of an aspiring singer and her co-workers at a greasy spoon diner. So, of course, this was a TV sitcom version of a pretty dramatic movie, which Alice doesn't live here anymore, which is weird to take a dramatic movie and turn it into kind of a screwball sitcom, if you will. But it was a great show. It starred Linda Lavin. Linda Lavin was a famous Broadway singer, actor, notorious pain in the ass, doesn't get along with anybody. Speaking of Sopranos turns, like Burt Young, she did an episode of The Sopranos as well. She played Meadow's therapist in college for one episode that drove Tony Soprano crazy because I guess the therapist recommended she go travel Europe or something and Tony Soprano wanted to fucking strangle her. Well, folks, if you didn't know, now you know. That was Linda Lavin, the star of Alice. So Vic Tayback, Beth Howland played Vera. Philip McKeon played Tommy. That was Nancy McKeon's brother. Nancy McKeon was Joe Ponicek in Facts of Life. Her brother Philip played Tommy and he died of COVID, I think a year or two ago. Polly Holiday famously played Flo. Celia Weston played Jolene. That's a southern name if you ever heard one. Dave Madden is Earl Hicks. Diane Ladd would eventually join the cast when Flo left. So I thought that was interesting. Diane Ladd got an Oscar nomination for the movie. And clearly the career wasn't going well because she joined this cast four seasons in. So to go from an Oscar nomination to joining a TV show four episodes in, not to be judgy, but that doesn't mean your career is on the upswing. Just my opinion. This show got tons of Emmy nominations and a few Golden Globe wins. It was a major, major show. It had a great theme song, which I played at the opening, of course, opening of the podcast. I made a note to read some reviews here so you get a feel for what Alice was like. So here's one that gives it a 7 out of 10. Okay. And the title is Mel and His Waitstaff. Well, there you go. I finally got to see the film Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, from which the Alice series is taken, and now I certainly have a better perspective on the series. The film was quite a bit more serious in this TV situation comedy. In fact, in only the last third of the film does Mel Sharples, and his diner figure into the plot of the film. But it's the whole show here. Vic Tayback was the only member of the cast of the film to repeat his role. That's true, although Diane Ladd did come back, but in a different role. In the film, Alice is fleeing from Phoenix after a bad relationship, and she stops in Tucson and takes a job at Mel's Diner to pay the rent and save up before she moves on to California. Here, Linda Lavin has settled in at Mel's Diner, and while the show centers around her trying to raise her son, Philip McKeon, the other members of Mel's waitstaff also have episodes centering around them. Blah, blah, blah. Alice's series was a bit more family-oriented than the mature drama the film was. Still, those servers in Mel's Diner and Mel himself made an indelible impression, bridging those Carter Reagan years in the American psyche. Huh. That last part was kind of interesting. The rest of it was sucky. Tons of writers on the show. Gary David Goldberg, I noticed, wrote an episode. He would go on to create shows like Family Ties. There you go. Linda Lavin, like I said, was famously difficult. Did not get along with a lot of her co-stars. But she directed 10 episodes of the show. Nancy Walker, the famous actor, she directed 3 episodes. And our boy Vic Tayback, he directed an episode of Alice. So there you go. The show did produce a spinoff. I feel like if you're going to run 202 episodes, you should probably produce a spinoff. And it did. Polly Holiday left the show and had her own show called Flow. It only lasted 29 episodes. Here's a synopsis. Very easy. A former Arizona waitress buys a rundown Texas bar. Flo. So when Polly Holiday left to play Flo, Diane Ladd joined the cast of Alice to play Belle, I think her name was. And there you go. Polly Holiday's still around. You see her every now and then. How about a review of Flo? First of all, who's in Flo? Polly Holiday, of course. No one else I really recognize. Mickey Jones did a guest spot. Henry Jones did a guest spot, not related. Anyway, let me read a review because I have no real conception of how this was received, except for the fact it didn't last long. Now, it got an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Lead Actress. How about that? So Polly Holiday got an Emmy nomination for this, even though it only lasted 29 episodes. Here is a synopsis. It's called A Pretty Decent Attempt. This was a pretty decent attempt to spin off one of the most more popular sitcom characters in television history into her own show. This, to me, could be seen as almost a redneck hybrid of the Mary Tyler Moore Show and a show that came out a few years later. Cheers. You pretty much got a look into Flo's world as she dealt with not only the crazies at her roadhouse, but with her domineering mother and her much more reserved little sister. The only thing that might have hurt it was the fact that the show didn't feature characters who were closer in personality to the Alice cast to help balance out Flo's wilder personality, much like Alice and Vera did on Alice. However, this still was a decent effort, and it's too bad it was so short-lived and was never really given a chance to develop. I kind of would agree. I mean, if she got an Emmy nomination, it couldn't have been too bad. Of course, the TV show Alice gave us some really famous tagline or famous phrases. Of course, Flo's was "Kiss my grits." That's a popular one. And what did Tayback always say? Mel was always like, "Stow it, dingy," to Vera, because he always called her dingy because she wasn't that smart. His big thing was stow it, dingy. Every time he wanted her to shut up, kind of like Archie Bunker would say, "Stifle, Edith." And I think that's it. So, and from 1976 on, right? Vic would be a recognizable household name. Life is never going to be the same for him anymore because he's now Mel Sharples on a hit show. Oh, and by the way, Telly Savalas, who I have repeatedly said should have been paired with Vic Tayback in like a buddy cop movie or something. Well, he did, and I did not know this. He did an episode of Alice playing himself. And you know how I found out? Because my dumbass, who didn't do his research, I posted some posts on Facebook about my Vic Tayback Part 1 episode. And in the posts in these various groups I'm a part of, some of you are probably part of those groups with me, I said, gosh, I wish he had ever worked with Telly Savalas. That would have been amazing. And I had a lot of people tell me how dumb I was and post clips of Telly Savalas on Alice. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pause the podcast. I'm going to find a YouTube clip and we're going to play it here. Hold on 1 second. Okay, the episode aired September 23rd, 1979. The title of the show was, "Has Anyone Here Seen Telly?" This it's basically Telly Savalas playing himself. He stops into the diner. Vera is the only one who sees him, and everyone else thinks Vera is a liar. But here is a couple minute clip of Telly Savalas on Alice.
Chase of the phone, baby.
Certainly.
Thanks, Don. Oh. Yeah, hello, Fatso. This is your beautiful big brother. Look, I've been delayed. Now, why don't I meet you at the Camelback and we'll go over the music there, okay? Right. Ciao. Thank you.
You're not really you, are you?
Who am I not really?
I don't like to say. I have to be careful, because you see, last week I saw Farrah Fawcett, and just last night, Burt Reynolds, And neither one of them turned out to be either one of them.
Oh. Well, don't worry. This time you're right. I really am Carol Burnett.
All right. That was clever. And that is Telly Savalas on Alice. I didn't know about it, but all my friends on Facebook made sure I know about it now. Thanks, friends. Anyway, now on to 1977. Vic only has two credits this year. I guess he was busy being Mel on Alice. Both credits are movies worth talking about, though. The first is Little Ladies of the Night. Oh, God. Sounds like a cross between a dwarf movie and a Dateline NBC thing. Little Ladies of the Night. Like on Catch a Predator or something. Let's take a look. What is Little Ladies of the Night about? I got to pull up my IMDb here now. Let's see. IMDb. All right. Give me 1 second, folks. Let's vamp it up. Little Ladies of the Night. Again, 1977 TV movie. The sister of ex-pimp and current Los Angeles police detective Kyle York was murdered working the streets a few years ago. Since his reform, he has teamed with Officer Russ Garfield to clear the streets of underage girls working in prostitution. Pretty young runaway Haley Atkins has been turned out. Down deep, she wants to go straight, but has had great difficulty escaping her pimp and doesn't even have a place to go. York and Garfield go out on a limb and try to help. Little Ladies of the Night. Now, the cover of this, like the picture, is like this young, like underage vamp-looking woman or girl, I should say. It's kind of weird because she looks young. And it occurred to me, that's Linda Pearl. I was like, holy shit, Linda Pearl is in this. So Linda Pearl was famous for a lot of things for you Office fans. She was Pam Beasley's mom that Michael Scott dated for a while. Killer cast in this, though. David Soul. Dude, he's Hutch from Starsky and Hutch. Louis Gossett Jr. was in this. Oscar winner, Louis Gossett Jr. Of course, Linda Pearl. Carolyn Jones. She was, shit, what the hell was her name in the Addams Family? What's the wife's name? Morticia Addams. Sorry. I couldn't remember the name. Who else is in this? Lana Wood. That's Natalie Wood's sister. Her crazy sister. Catherine Helmond was in this. She was in Soap. She's most famous as Judith Light's mom in Who's the Boss? The horny old lady with the red hair. I saw her in a grocery store once in Northridge, California. So there's that. Who else was in this? No one else I recognize. But that's a great cast. That's a fun movie. Now, the next movie that he did this year also has a killer cast. It's called The Choir Boys. Now, this is a movie that was featured in an episode of the Video Archives podcast. That's Tarantino's podcast. So that's how I was familiar with this movie, and I have seen it since then. So it's called The Choir Boys, 1977. Here's a synopsis. A group of Los Angeles cops decide to take off some of the pressure of their jobs by engaging in various forms of after-hours debauchery. So it's cops being bad after hours, drinking, strippers, whores, that kind of thing. Great cast, though. Charles Durning. Louis Gossett Jr. is back. I love that Vic Tayback only made two movies, only had two credits in 1977, and both of them were with Louis Gossett Jr. Who else is in this? Randy Quaid. Randy Quaid. Oh, and Christmas is coming. This is Randy Quaid season. Cousin Eddie. James Woods was in this. Burt Young was in this. Burt Young is back. Ah, oh, tip of 40 for you, Burt Young. I love that Burt Young passed away, and his spirit remains on Fanacek's podcast. Anyway, this movie was famously directed by Robert Aldrich. So Robert Aldrich is a tough guy director. He directed The Dirty Dozen, which I've done a podcast episode about. But that is The Choir Boys. Now, we are in 1978. And old Vic does episodes of Vegas and Hawaii Five-0, classic shows. He also does an episode of a short-lived TV show called James at 16. I'd heard of this before. I was never terribly interested, but I figure now's the time, right? So James, a daydreamer and photographer, must learn to cope with his life as his father moves the family from Oregon to Boston, Massachusetts. Now, what are you going to do? I'm sorry. I've heard some crazy synopses before, but you do not move from Oregon to Boston. You do not. That is life-changing shit that you'll never recover from. I just don't get it. I mean, like, it doesn't seem like that big a deal to me. What else did I want to talk about with this show? That's the synopsis. I guess I'll look at the cast. Lance Kerwin was James Hunter, the kid. He actually was in Escape to Witch Mountain with Kim Richards, which is funny because you know who else was in this show, James is 16? Kim Richards. And as my second mention of Kim Richards in this episode, of course, she was on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills with her sister Kyle Richards. Kyle Richards was the original Lindsay Wallace in Halloween. I love this podcast. I love talking about this shit. I'm so nerdy about it all. It had really fun guest stars on this show, though. Let's take a look who. I said that, but now that I'm looking at it. Oh, Tony Moran. Oh, interesting. I just mentioned Halloween. Tony Moran is in this. Tony Moran was the original Michael Myers, not The Shape. But when in the original Halloween, when they rip his mask off, the face you see is Tony Moran. He was Aaron Moran's brother. Aaron Moran was Joni on Happy Days. And boy, I could do this shit forever. Roseanne Arquette did a guest spot on this. Melissa Sue Anderson. Melissa Sue Anderson, real pretty. She was the daughter in Little House on the Prairie that went blind. Remember the blonde who went blind? Well, that's her. Kate Jackson did this. Deborah Winger did this. Holy shit. Emmett Walsh did this show. A lot of big names. Vic Tayback, of course. I could do this on and on and on, but I think it's about Terry Nunn. Terry Nunn was a singer, wasn't she? I thought, am I crazy? Is Terry Nunn not the singer of Berlin? Take my breath away. Bum, bum, bum. Shooby dooby. No, I guess I'm wrong. Maybe that's not her. Who was the lead singer of Berlin? Well, I'm going to, in real time, Google that. Lead singer of Berlin. Was it not Terry Nunn? It was Terry Nunn. I was right. But I didn't see it on IMDb. So Terry Nunn did this. She would go on to be in a band called Berlin. This is all off the cuff. I happen to know a lot about this. Great, good band. They were solid. And they had some really cool hits. But then they got brought in to do the Top Gun soundtrack, which is Take My Breath Away. But it wasn't really a Berlin song. It was like, you know, studio musicians on. They really just wanted Terry Nunn. So Terry Nunn went and sang it. It became a quote-unquote Berlin song. But it really pissed off the rest of the band. Alienated the band because it wasn't their sound. It made her famous and it ended up breaking up the band. Take my breath away. Bum, bum, bum. Let's read a review of James at 16 because I still don't feel like I know anything about the show. Except it's about a poor kid who had to move. That's the big fucking thing. All right. You should have had my childhood, asshole. Tom at 11. Oh, shit. That's my real name. Fanacek at 11. All right. Forgotten series from the 70s. In the last 30 years, there have been exactly three halfway realistic TV series about teenagers. Freaks and Geeks. My So-Called Life, and this one, which is the oldest and by far the most obscure. They were all critically acclaimed, but all three of them put together didn't last even half as long as crap like Beverly Hills 90210. It's ironic that as obsessed as Hollywood is with teenagers, they rarely show real teenagers, but instead these incredibly good-looking, articulate, acne-free versions, usually played by actors in their mid-20s. I remember this show from when I was a kid, and then again when it was on some cable network again briefly in the early 90s. It was about three normal middle-class 70s teenagers with normal middle-class teenage problems. It was a little preachy, but lacked the ridiculous melodrama of 90210 and its ilk. So there you go. That's James at 16. Sounds like it was a pretty good show. Got several Emmy nominations, and then it was shit canned. So 78 also gave us some forgettable movies with killer casts. He did Getting Married, and he did The Cheap Detective. But they both have good casts, so I'll read through them real fast for you. So let's read Getting Married. 1978 movie. I'll skip this synopsis, but it had Bess Armstrong. She was the mom in My So-Called Life, which just came up. Oh my God, it's all connected. The universe loves my podcast. So Bess Armstrong was the mom in My So-Called Life. Who else was in this? I thought it was Fabian was in this. Mark Harmon was in this. Katherine Hellman is back from Who's the Boss? She was in this. I love when that happens. Audra Lindley. She was in Three's Company. Right, which will come up again later. She was Mrs. Roper. She was in this. Christopher McDonald was in this. He is Shooter McGavin, right, in Happy Gilmore. Vic Tayback, Richard Thomas. Richard Thomas was famously in The Waltons. Then he came back later on in Ozark as Laura Linney's dad. Oh, and then The Cheap Detective. Who was in The Cheap Detective? 1978 movie with a great cast, according to me. Peter Falk and Margaret. What? Sid Caesar, Stalker Channing, she was Rizzo, she was mentioned earlier. Dom DeLuise, Louise Fletcher, Madeline Kahn, Marsha Mason, she came up in the last episode. Phil Silvers, Abe Vigoda, who I talked about earlier, lived in my neighborhood. Ah, James Cromwell, Scatman Crothers, David Ogden Steers from MASH, Vic Tayback, of course, Jonathan Banks, he was Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Oh, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. Killer, killer cast. I will say this for Vic Tayback. He's worked with some outstanding folks. And now we're in 1979, and that brings Vic into some really fun TV projects. A lot of stuff I wasn't familiar with. First up, how about Sweepstakes? 1979, 9 episodes. Yikes. Let's read a synopsis. In each episode of this series, three persons each buy a sweepstakes ticket, and each of them has their own reason for wanting to win the jackpot, which is $1 million. And they all become finalists, and when the winner is announced, we see how he or she does after winning the money. And we all also see what happens to the other two after losing the money. Interesting premise. Take a look at the cast here. Ed Burns, Frankie Avalon are some of the leads. Bill Dana. Dinah Madoff did the show. She Richard Mulligan also did the show. So Richard Mulligan and Dinah Madoff they played father-daughter in Empty Nest. Well, there you go. Ron Palillo did this. He was Arnold Horshack in Welcome Back, Kotter. Tom Poston, he did this, and he was mentioned earlier, Newhart. Kim Richards did this. That's my third mention of Kim Richards now from Beverly Hills Housewives, whatever. Adrienne Barbeau from Maude, she did this. Morgan Fairchild, Adam Arkin. Adam Arkin is the son of Alan Arkin. But since I mentioned Halloween already, why don't I mention Halloween again? Adam Arkin was Jamie Lee Curtis's love interest in Halloween H2O. There you go. Roddy McDowell did the show. Priscilla Barnes did the show. She was on Three's Company. She played Terry, one of the many replacements for Suzanne Summers when she left. And by the way, rest in peace, Suzanne Summers. Fred Willard did the show. David Ogden Steers did the show. I mentioned him earlier. He's from MASH. Rue McClanahan did the show. Henry Gibson did the show. Catherine Helmond did this show. That's my third mention of Catherine Helmond from Who's the Boss? And Soap with Richard Mulligan. Gary Berghoff from MASH. He was Radar. Bess Armstrong, the mom from My So-Called Life. She did this show. Erin Moran. I mentioned her earlier because her brother was the original face of Michael Myers. Erin Moran was Joni. And she did this. Dee Dee Khan was Frenchie in Grease. She did the show. Bernie Koppel from The Love Boat did the show. Oh my God, folks. Abe Vigoda did the show. That's my third or fourth mention of Abe Vigoda. He did this show. Frederick Forrest did the show. He was the original captain in 21 Jump Street. Susan Strasberg did the show. Ooh. Who else? Dick Van Patten from Eight Is Enough. He did the show. Paul Benedict, one of the neighbors in the Jeffersons. He did the show. Jim Backus from Gilligan's Island. He did the show. Tab Hunter did the show. My God, this is like fucking epic. Epic. Aldo Ray did the show. He was Cliff Booth's buddy in the novelization of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Of course, my man Vic Tayback. Oh my gosh. Anyone else? Please tell me there's some other cool shit. I think we're running out. Oh, Roxy Roker from the Jeffersons. That's also Lenny Kravitz's mom. She did the show. Rosie Greer did the show. Nipsey Russell did the show. Greg Mulavy. Oh, he's going to come up in a future episode. Chuck Woolery did the show. Chuck Woolery, the host of the dating game. Be back in 2 and 2. That fucking guy. Right? The dating game? The dating game? Yeah, I think that's what it was called. Oh, my Lord. That was some all-star shit we just experienced. All for what? I don't even remember the name of the show we were talking about. Oh, Sweepstakes. There you go. So there's that. Okay. Another forgettable show Vic Tayback did. He did a Twilight Zone-esque type of show. It was called Time Express. Only lasted 4 episodes. Yikes. Double yikes. In 1979, again, lasted 4 episodes. Here is a synopsis of Time Express. Jason and Margaret Winters are the sophisticated hosts of the Time Express, a train which takes its passengers back in time to relive a pivotal moment of their lives. I think that's kind of interesting. The cast was Vincent Price. Ooh, he was the lead, and we're going to talk about him in the trivia. Let's just go to bat. Let's go right to the trivia on this one, because Vincent Price, I think, kind of helped develop the show or something like that. Let's take a look here. Vincent Price was working in the UK to film Dr. Fibes Rises Again in 72 and Theatre of Blood in 73. When he saw some episodes of Doctor Who, it inspired him to create an American version of the show with him playing the Doctor. Unfortunately, he was unable to obtain the rights for Doctor Who and later developed this movie, or rather this TV show, to make up for it. So I thought that was kind of neat. So I never knew that Vincent Price wanted to make an American version of Doctor Who. By the way, Doctor Who in the UK has been on for, 40 years now? Maybe more? Longer? 50 years? It's very popular. Lots of different actors have played Doctor Who. I've never seen a single minute of that show. I don't know. I'm not a sci-fi guy anyway, but I'm like, how has this show been on for that long? And I've never even caught a glimpse of that fucker on YouTube or something. Or like Facebook Reels. I don't know. Anyway, it eludes me. Then, back to Vic Tayback. Then, the TV movie Portrait of a Stripper. All right, and we're going to talk about this. Probably the greatest TV movie title of all time, Portrait of a Stripper. Young me would have been all in on this. You had me at Portrait of a Stripper. Why no sequels? Why is there a Portrait of a Stripper 2? You know, Portrait of a Stripper 6. More Portraits of a Stripper. If you feel like you've heard of this movie and you're about my age and you like SNL, well, you probably recognize it when it was brought up by the character Mary Catherine Gallagher, played by Molly Shannon. And I'm going to play a clip for you now.
I'm sorry, Mary. Are you feeling okay?
No.
I'm My feelings would best be expressed in a monologue from the 1979 made-for-TV movie Portrait of a Stripper. This very sad story of a young lady who works as a stripper to support her only son, starring Miss Leslie Ann Warren. Okay?
Yeah.
I really need this gig, okay? I mean, do you think that... You think I do this for myself? Is that what you think? Because I do it for my son, you know. I do it so that I can buy him diapers and cereal and maybe just send him to a nice school someday, you know? I mean, do you think that I like coming home and smelling like booze and businessmen with money stuck inside of my panties? You know? Wait, all that cash down there? Do you think that I like that? God, I came in here with so many dreams, and what do? You rip them all away from me.
All right, and that was Mary Catherine Gallagher's portrayal of the film Portrait of a Serial Killer. So, again, that's how I knew about it. Let's read a synopsis, although I think it's kind of been given away. The touching portrayal of a young mother and dance student who travels to California after the death of her husband. In order to pay the bills, she takes up burlesque dancing. To her dismay, the club she works at is sold to new owners who transform it into a hardcore strip club where the dancers must bear all. Reluctantly, she performs because apparently she can get another fucking job. They can't go somewhere else. Anyway, well, to kind of call another place, you have to dance naked. Yeah. Anyway, that was a weird Jewish tangent. Reluctantly, she performs. Unfortunately, a photographer hired by her father-in-law is in the audience who snaps some naughty pics of her performing. He uses these to try and get custody of his grandson. Story as old as time. Like Mary Catherine Gallagher said, starred Leslie Ann Warren, Edward Herman was in it, Vic Tayback was in this, anyone else famous? Casey Martell was in this. He would later on be one of Kirk Cameron's buddies in Growing Pains. That's how I know him anyway. Anyone else in this that is worth mentioning? I don't see any big names here. Anyway, that is Portrait of a Serial Killer. And we are now finally in the 80s. All right, Vic is still working on Alice, but he's making time for other projects like Chips. He did Chips, which is a great show. Another great opening theme. He also did 4 TV movies this year. One was The Night the City Screamed, which we talked about in the Robert Culp episode, because that's a Robert Culp movie. He also did this year's Blonde about Marilyn Monroe, which I'm not going to read about the movie, but I may note that it's got a really cool cast. So this year's Blonde, 1980, about Marilyn Monroe. Lloyd Bridges was in this. Norman Fell from Three's Company. How about that? Michael Lerner, the guy that in New York lived in the Bronx, went to my video store when I worked in the video store. He was also in Elf with James Caan. Wow, it's all coming back. Who else is in this? Barney Martin. I don't know why. That's not that great a cast. I don't know why I made a note to read about it. I'm not seeing that many cool people. Anyway, so that is this year's Blonde about Marilyn Monroe. What else did he do? He did Rage. Rage was a real popular TV movie. I'll pull that one up too. Rage with an exclamation point. 1980 TV movie. In an attempt to be rehabilitated, a rapist goes to therapy while in prison. I don't want to be a rapist no more. Please fix my raping tendencies. Starred David Soul, who we brought up earlier from Starsky and Hutch. Also had Craig T. Nelson in it. Wow, I like Craig T. Nelson. Who else is in this? Vic Tayback, of course. Yaphet Kotto, big, big actor. I like him. All right, what else did I want to read about with Rage? That's about it there. Then he did a movie called Gridlock, which has an interesting synopsis. I thought this was worth mentioning. So again, 1980 movie, Gridlock. In Los Angeles, there is the Golden Triangle Freeway Interchange, which I know well. It fucking sucks. The 5, 405, and 10 all cross over each other. It's like fucking hell. Hell on earth. But anyway, as long as the traffic can move through the triangle, the commute runs smooth. On this fate, which it never does. On this fateful morning, three accidents happen, simultaneously causing all of Los Angeles to gridlock, trapping cars on the freeways for the entire day. A TV movie in the style of Love Boat and Fantasy Island, multiple stories intersect with each other. Funny scenes, cute stories. Except this is harkens back to a time when you needed a bunch of accidents for this shit to happen. In LA now, it just fucking happens. It's called Monday. It's called Tuesday. It's called every fucking day. I'm not kidding. There have been times at 2 in the morning I'm driving in LA. I get stuck in traffic. I'm like, who the fuck else is driving at 2 in the morning? Maybe I need to see a therapist. I'll go see that rape therapist. Maybe he's got an opening in his schedule. This movie, Rage, starred Desi Arnaz Jr. Who else was in this? Anybody famous? Shelley Favare, who worked with Craig T. Nelson on Coach. Boom. Hooking it all up. Larry Hankin was in this. Larry Hankin, I interviewed him in my podcast. Very famous actor. Look him up. Howard Hessman was in this. In real life, was friends with Larry Hankin. They came out of the San Francisco comedy scene together. Howard Hessman was brought up earlier. He was Dr. Johnny Fever in WKRP in Cincinnati. Michael Lerner was in this. This is the king of podcast episodes with callbacks. My God. Michael Lerner, again, used to come to my video store in the Bronx in the early 90s. Rue McClanahan was in this. We brought her up earlier. James McKeachin, Ed McMahon, Al Molinaro from Happy Days was in this. Chris Charles Napier was in this. Very famous actor. Wow. Man, Vic Tayback, of course. Abe Vigoda was in this. Abe Vigoda, a world record 6th mention of Abe Vigoda. Nedra Voles was in this from Different Strokes. Wow. Paul Wilson was in this. I met Paul Wilson once. He was a judge in a sketch comedy show I was in 2005, 2006, 2006, I think. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Anyway, my gosh, I am dizzy from all the callbacks. That is gridlock. I made a note to read some trivia about gridlock. I don't know why, but I'm going to trust my instincts here. Howard Hessman, who I mentioned earlier, Howard Hessman plays the voice of the morning drive time disc jockey, Senor Smooth. At the time, Hessman was best known for portraying another AM drive time DJ, Dr. Johnny Fever, on WKRP in Cincinnati. Well, there you go. Another trivia I made note to read. The Lisa Hartman Rock Band was based on Jefferson Airplane, which was going through a similar turmoil at the time. So Lisa Hartman was in the movie. I guess her character plays like she's in a rock band that's going through a turmoil. I have met several people from the band Jefferson Airplane. Had lunch with them once. That's a long story that I'm not going to go into. Now, as we progress into the 80s, Vic does a lot of classic TV. He did T.J. Hooker, which I never got. I think it's an Aaron Spelling show. But Shatner as a uniformed beat cop, like he's in his 50s. Who did that guy piss off? Running around kind of overweight. He did Matt Houston. He did 4 episodes of Fantasy Island. The 4th one was a Christopher Hewitt episode, I will say. The first 3 were Hervé Villechaize. The last one was a Christopher Hewitt episode. He replaced Hervé. Vic Tayback did Hotel, Murder, She Wrote. He did 6 episodes of The Love Boat. 6 episodes of The Love Boat. Now, over those 6 episodes, because I went through them all, these are some of the guest stars he worked with in his 6 episodes of The Love Boat. Whew. Ready? Pack a lunch. Tom Hanks, Doris Roberts. He also did Fantasy Island with Doris Roberts, by the way. So Tom Hanks, Doris Roberts, Nipsey Russell, Delta Burke, Conrad Bain, Janet Leigh, Franklin Cover, right? He played Tom Willis in The Jeffersons. Charlotte Ray, Robert Reed. Charlotte Ray, by the way, was Mrs. Garrett. Robert Reed, the dad from the Brady Bunch. Connie Stevens, The Temptations. Terry Hatcher, Marion Ross, Peter Graves from Mission Impossible. Jenny Lee Harrison. Let's talk about her real quick. Jenny Lee Harrison, yet another actor from Three's Company. She was the one who played. So now they were writing Chrissy off the show, Suzanne Summers, because she asked for more money. So the producers were writing her off the show. So she would only appear via telephone calls. So like there was a period of time with Three's Company where at the end of every episode, they're basically a phone call. They'd do like a split screen and she'd be wherever the hell she was on the phone with, you know, the other cast members and that, and then they slowly phase her out of the show. But what they did do is they brought in her cousin, equally ditzy, something Snow, played by Jenny Lee Harrison. And I'll never forget seeing an old magazine. I came across an old magazine once interviewing Jenny Lee Harrison. And now she was talking about how, you know, I just really want to be remembered as a really good actress. And it's like, sorry, honey, that didn't happen. But that's Jenny Lee Harrison. Okay, back to the 6 episodes. He also worked with Roger Mosley. He was TC in Magnum PI. Alan Thicke, Jane Meadows, Steve Allen, Tina Louise from Gilligan's Island, Barbie Benton, Milton Berle and his massive schlong, Tom Bosley, Ruth Buzzy, Carol Channing, Charo, by the way, did 10 episodes of The Love Boat. Holy fuck. The whole cast of Leave It to Beaver, right? Barbara Billingsley, Tony Dow, Jerry Mathers, Florence Henderson from The Brady Bunch, Don Knotts from A Million Things, including Three's Company. I think I've almost mentioned every cast member of Three's Company. Holy shit. That's a lot of famous. I mean, Vic Tayback may win the award for just most amazing co-stars ever in a career. Back to Tayback, he also did some short-lived 80s shows. He did Crazy Like a Fox, which ran from 84 to 86. It lasted 35 episodes. It's kind of stupid. I'm going to read about it here. Where is it? All right. It's kind of the great example of like the title before the actual premise, because here's the synopsis. Again, it's called Crazy Like a Fox. Rough and tumble private investigator Harry Fox, Harry Fox solves crimes with the reluctant help of his son, respected San Francisco lawyer Harrison Fox. So Crazy Like a Fox. You know that they came up with that first. Crazy Like a Fox. Now we got to write a character with the name of a fox, right? I don't know. The bun in the oven. It's a guy named Detective Bun and his new partner, Larry Oven. Bun in the oven. Bum, bum, bum. There you go. That's how I think a show like this was created. I wrote down an example being Harry and the Beaver. Harry and the Beaver. That's awful. Okay. He also did Tayback. He did a Canadian show called Adderley. Ran from 86 to 88. Lasted 45 episodes. It jumped at me because I was like, what is this? Turns out, like I said, it's a Canadian show. I'm not going to read much about it. It starred, I guess, a bunch of Canadian folks. I'm guessing they were famous up north, those crazy Canucks. And of course, Tayback pumped out some movies during these years, during the 80s. He did Mysterious 2. It's a TV movie worth talking about. Mysterious 2, 1982. Two aliens visit the Earth in an effort to enlist converts to travel the universe with them. Here's why that's interesting. Check out this trivia. So again, it's about two aliens looking to enlist people. Let me pull up the trivia for you now, see if it sounds familiar. Where was it? Okay, the main character is based loosely on Heaven's Gate cult leader Marshall Applewhite, who led 38 of his followers to commit suicide in order to transport their spirits onto a spaceship that he believed was following the Hale-Bopp comet. And if you remember that shit, I think that was in the 90s. They were all wearing Nikes, remember that? They thought that a comet was coming with a spaceship and they were all going to get on it. Oh, and the Nike thing was weird. I wonder if that affected Nike stocks. They're all wearing the same Nikes. I wonder if Nike was like, fuck, didn't see this coming. Who was in this damn movie? Let's take a look at the cast of Mysterious 2. John Forsythe, Priscilla Pointer, of course, Tayback. Robert Englund, that's Freddy Krueger. Robert Pine, it's Chris Pine's dad. I think that's about it. I don't really see anyone else I recognize that's worth mentioning. Okay, so that is Mysterious 2. He also did the Jesse Owens story with Tom Bosley, the dad from Happy Days. Tom Bosley did not play Jesse Owens. That would have been poor casting. He did a foreign production of Treasure Island, and now we're 1988, right? And so Vic would have 2 years left of working and living. He's nearing the end of his life and career. He knocks out 2 episodes of Tales from the Dark Side, which I liked. In 89, he does a Patrick Dempsey movie, Loverboy. This was a pretty famous movie, really, because the premise is like the same premise as a lot of pornos. Randy is still unfocused after 2 years in college. When his dad refuses to keep paying his tuition, he gets a job delivering pizzas. Several alluring cougars pay him $200 for pizza delivery and services rendered, right? That never happens to pizza delivery boys. I don't think there's any remotely attractive woman anywhere on the planet is like, I want to fuck a pizza delivery boy. or else there would have been a lot more pizza delivery boys. Everyone would be applying for that fucking job. What do you do? Well, during the day, I'm in finance. At night, I deliver pizzas. Every night? Every night. Every night. You bet your ass I do. Again, famous Patrick Dempsey movie. Starred Patrick Dempsey and Kate Jackson. Anyone else in this? Dylan Walsh was in this. Let's take a look who else. Of course, Tayback, Robert Picardo, Kirstie Alley was in this. Carrie Fisher was in this. I forgot about that. She was Princess Leia. That is that. Now, after this, Tayback during this time was doing some straight-to-video movies, you know. But then he gets big with an animated classic. He did All Dogs Go to Heaven, which was a lot of fun. What else here? Interesting thing about All Dogs Go to Heaven. Let me read this to you real quick. So All Dogs Go to Heaven, I'll go ahead and read the synopsis. A canine angel, Charlie, sneaks back to Earth from heaven, but ends up befriending an orphan girl who can speak to animals. In the process, Charlie learns that friendship is the most heavenly gift of all. Wow, really famous voices, Dom DeLuise, Burt Reynolds, Lonnie Anderson. Wow, they're all friends. Now, this is interesting. Judith Barcy played the little girl. Let me read you a trivia about Judith Barcy. I'm going to pull it up here. So again, she was a little girl in the movie. She played a little girl in the film. This was Judith Barcy's final film. She and her mother were murdered by Barcy's father a year and a half before the film's release. The ending theme, Lone Survivor, is dedicated... Lone Survivor. The ending theme... There were no Lone Survivors in that motherfucker. The ending theme, Love Survives, is dedicated to Barcy's memory. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I wonder if all little girls go to heaven too. I made myself laugh. And that is a wrap on Vic Tayback, folks. Oh, but how about... As a little gift for you, I don't have a set of steak knives to give you, but I do have some what the fuck credits. I have 5 credits that I did not talk about that I thought I would. I identified 5. Let's knock them out. The first one, a quote unquote what the fuck credit. 1976 movie, Mention of the Doomed. This is a what the fuck premise if I've ever heard one. Check it out. A mad scientist fills his basement dungeon with victims in an insane attempt to restore his daughter's eyesight. What? A mad scientist fills the basement dungeon with victims in an attempt to restore his daughter's eyesight? Now, how about a trip to the eye doctor? No? You're gonna fill, I just, it makes me laugh. Like, and then the sequel is, I've noticed she's saying what a lot. Let's fill that basement up again and help her hearing. Oh, man. The cast, though, included Gloria Graham, who I mentioned in the last episode. She was Violet, the little blonde girl in It's a Wonderful Life. So there you go. I went like 55 episodes without ever even seeing Gloria Graham, and then 2 episodes in a row she pops up. I thought that was funny. The second what the fuck credit, 1979, short-lived TV series Super Train. It lasted 9 episodes because it super sucked. The adventures of a nation-spanning train and its passengers. Okay, let's read a review and a trivia. That's what I wanted to focus on here. So here's a review. Much ado about absolutely nothing. If you weren't watching TV back in 78 and 79, you can't know how much hype NBC subjected the public to over this inane piece of fluff. For months before it premiered, at 10-minute intervals during primetime, there were commercials about this supposedly innovative series. The money spent on Supertrain and its advertising would have helped everyone under the poverty line in America to buy a house and a car and still have money left over, and would have been much better spent. It was truly a case of overkill, especially when the series premiered and it was such a glittering piece of trash from the first moment. So that made me laugh. I made a note to read one of the trivias here. This was the most expensive American TV series ever produced at the time, and it was an epic failure. So there you go. All right, the third one, 1981 TV movie, The Time Crystal. Kind of a stupid title. The Time Crystal. Here's a synopsis. A lad finds himself magically sent back to ancient Egypt, where he and the young King Tut team up to stop their evil and overly ambitious elders. Okay, so the lead, though, the little boy that goes back to where King Tut was Chris Barnes. He played Tanner in the Bad News Bears movies. Now, this may not be funny to you if you haven't seen the Bad News Bears, but if you ever go back and watch the original Bad News Bears, not that Billy Bob Thornton thing, but the Walter Matthau one, it was vulgar as shit. And nobody was more vulgar than Tanner. There's a whole scene where it's like, this team's on the butt a bunch of Spix Jews and booger eaters. This little boy, he's always fighting everyone, pushing everyone. And then it's when he left at this little fucker. He goes back and he's working with King Tut, and I don't know. Just made me laugh. This show, by the way, must have been a vile piece of shit because it only lasted. Oh no, it was a TV movie, so I don't know. Anyway, I'd never heard of it, but I love it. It was directed by Ron Howard, by the way. Ron Howard. That's crazy to me. But I just love that it's Tanner going back to work with King Tut, who, and the last time I saw Tanner, he was talking about Spix Jews and booger eaters. But I did make a note to read. No, did I? I guess I didn't. Anyway, that's it. Directed by Ron Howard. Okay, we're going to move on. The next one, 1982, short-lived series, The Shape of Things. The Shape of Things. 1982 lasted 3 episodes. Yikes. A variety show with a feminist perspective, with each episode being hosted by four well-known women in entertainment. What made me laugh about it is it's like it's all with women and women empowerment, feminism, and it lasted three episodes. That's what men thought of women, apparently, in 1982. It just made me laugh. The cast was Howie Mandel did this, Elaine Boozler. I'm trying to think of anyone famous. I mean, Donna Dixon, Morgan Fairchild, Rita Moreno, Betty White. Eileen Brennan, I like her. Lynn Redgrave, Susan Anton. Ruth Buzzy, she was huge. Isabel Sanford from the Jeffersons. So a lot of big women did this, but it didn't last. So I guess feminism wasn't all the rage. I made a note to read some trivia here. This short-lived show lasted for only 3 weeks on NBC, airing early in the administration of Ronald Reagan. Many letters were received showing audiences found the show unfunny and vulgar, and with negative reaction to the overtly feminist left-wing politics discussed on the show. Just after the show was canceled, executive producer George Schlatter, who, by the fucking way, I talked about this, and I lost the interview. He wrote a book. I read it. His publicist reached out to me. I interviewed him 45 minutes. It was amazing, and I lost it in editing. Fuck. Just after the show was canceled, executive producer George Schlatter, most famous for Owen and Martin's Laughing, commented on the failure of the show in May 1982 article in New York Times. We wanted to do a series in which scantily clad men were the sex objects and the women were in control. It was meant to be teasing and fun, but I guess that didn't come across. Schlatter had also produced a sketch comedy show for ABC in the summer of 69, Turn On, which was canceled after only one episode. And man, oh, that makes me sad. I interviewed Schlatter. He won't be alive much longer. He's in his 90s. Fuck. Anyway, final thing, Vic Tayback. Final what the fuck credit, 1987 TV movie, The Three Kings. It's got a what the fuck synopsis for you. I'll pull it up. Three mental patients think they are the wise men seeking Jesus in 1980s Los Angeles. And I just loved that. So that is Vic Tayback, two episodes. So let's end it with a thank you. Thank you, Vic Tayback, for the work. It's been a pleasure going through your career. You worked with so many famous people that it's mind-blowing. You are not forgotten. I need a Vic Tayback autographed glossy photo for my office. So that's my new hunt. I will find one. I promise you I'll find one. And I'm going to hang it up right next to my Telly Savalas autograph. I got one that says, "Who loves you, baby?" I need Vic Tayback. Just want to say thank you for the work, man. You're not forgotten. Your legacy lives on. I also want to thank you folks for listening. If you like the podcast, you know what to do. Rate it and review it. That always helps me. You can email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter @fanacekpodcast. Of course, I'm always on Facebook. That's where most of you reach out to me. I am Real Fanacek on Facebook. I'm in like 75 different groups. That's where a lot of you know me. So hit me up. Tell me what you like, what you want to hear. Let me know if you want me to send you some stickers. I send out stickers almost every week now. I've got some loyal listeners. But really what I need you to do, I need you to prove your loyalty to me by staying tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.